Is up 12s. This is the Seahawks Collective presented by Hog Media. We've got a fun show today because we get to talk about a Seahawks shutout win over Minnesota on Sunday. Seahawks first shutout since 2015, and here to yap about it for the next hour with me, Michael Sean Dugar, covering the Hawks for The Athletic, Brian Nemhauser, the Hawk blogger, and Rob Staton from the Seahawks draft blog. Look, guys, we started this show in August. I got to join in September. It has been a lot of fun. Excited to have everyone here with us watching tonight. So leave any questions you have in the chat, and we'll try to get to them all. But it is now December, which is pretty wild to say. We had some snow here where I am in Boston today. It was the first. Okay, we are actually in December. So I'm going to put a little twist on our usual overall take Tuesday takeaway. But before we get to that, I do have to quickly say, really quick off camera, Rob mentioned to us that he's going on a little trip in 9 hours. Rob, where are you headed?
Yeah, well, hopefully in 9 hours, I will be on a plane to the United States, where we are flying to Florida, and then we are going on a Disney cruise. So very much looking forward to it, and hopefully the weather is warm. I love Christmas. I don't typically go away to somewhere warmer at this time of year, but we're doing it this year, and we'll see how it goes.
You're doing it. And we won't spend too much time on this because I know we have a lot of Seahawks things to get to. But Brian and Mike, I know some people have some really hot opinions on cruises and whether or not they'd ever even go on a cruise. So where do you stand on this?
I've been on a cruise. It was great. Not really my thing, to be honest. Not my favorite thing. I am very
Disney.
I know. I'm very excited, AB, to hear whether there are more kids on this cruise or Disney adults on this cruise. Because when I was flying down to LA, it was like half the flight were Seahawks fans and half the flight were Disney adults, like fully decked out in Disney gear. And you know what? You know, I don't hate a Disney adult. You know, everyone can love their thing, but you know, it's not that's not me. That's not me. So I'm hoping for the best for Rob. I'm hoping his kids love it. And I'm hoping that he has some great stories, as I'm sure he will when he comes back.
I'm sure he will. Mike, where do you stand on this?
I've never been on a cruise and I probably never will. I can't say I'm against it per se because I haven't done it. So I don't know what I would I just imagine just not. I don't really like being on boats in general. So there's that. It looks fun sometimes, though. I see some of them got like the like roller coasters and stuff on them or slides on like the top. Like, it looks all right. I would just never know. Never will.
They look so fun. So, Rob, we're going to need at least one amazing story for you. So choose wisely on what you decide to share with the Seahawks Collective when you get back. But let's get to our overall Tuesday takeaway. And because it's December, like I mentioned, I'm going to have each of you pick a holiday song, a Christmas movie, maybe a food or a special decoration that really embodies the Seahawks win that we saw on Sunday. So the brave soul that will kick us off. Let's go, Mike. What do you have?
Okay, this is difficult because I am not a Christmas movie or music person. I sound like the Grinch today. Yeah, I'm not a Christmas music or a Christmas movie.
Your kids are gonna want more than this, Mike. You're gonna have to amp it up a bit.
I know, like just before we recorded, my wife made me buy a red holiday sweater so we could take family photos on Friday, and I'm already dreading just pressing the checkout button on the Amazon on the sweater. I was like, I'm never going to wear this $40 sweater ever again other than Friday, and I'm going to hate wearing it Friday. Anyway, but it made me think of this movie. I think it's a Christmas movie. It's called A Collateral Beauty. It's a Will Smith movie, and I'm not going to spoil it because there is a twist at the end, but it kind of reminds me of the game we just watched in that it's like entertaining. And then you get to the end and you're like, wow, that was actually pretty bad. like I was entertained by Sunday. And then I like sat down, looked at the numbers, rewatched the game. And I was like, at least from one team's perspective, like we just watched really bad ball. On the part of the rookie quarterback, Max Brosmer. But it's weird because I watched the game again and it had replay value, very similar to that Christmas movie. It's so bad, that Will Smith movie, but yet I've seen it like 5 times. It's very, I can't get enough of it. Sometimes I do like bad movies though, so that makes sense.
Well, we hope maybe not to see that exact game 5 times. Maybe on the defensive side would be great. Brian, what is it for you?
You know, I don't necessarily celebrate Christmas, but I do like a good Christmas movie. And I would say Christmas Vacation is the one that reminds me of this game, because Cousin Eddie and the noxious fumes of the sewer from his RV, that was kind of the Seahawks offense for a lot of this game. But then at the end, you pull it out, you look at the beautiful family coming together, and it's 26-0, and it was fun, and all were merry. So I think that's the movie. And plus, man, that movie cracks me up every single time.
I love it. I love the way that it comes together. I got to get this one in the chat. Ernest Saves Christmas. Like that one.
Good one.
That is a good, good one. So we have some very creative listeners here tonight. Rob, what would it be for you?
I've not seen Ernest Saves Christmas or Christmas Vacation. I have not
what?
Seen
what?
No.
Well, you, I haven't you probably either. Haven't seen Ernest Saves no. Christmas.
I've seen no,
I've,
some
I've not.
I've seen some really bad Christmas films as well. Like Christmas with the Cranks is the worst film that was ever made. Like it is just I could do an hour stream talking about how much I hate Christmas with the Cranks. But there are some great Christmas films as well. I've gone for the song though. I have gone for the great Last Christmas by the British band Wham, which was basically just George Michael. And the reason I've picked that is because Last Christmas, I just feel like this team is in such a different place to last year. Like this time last year, obviously the first year of Mike McDonald, things were coming together. It was around about this time that they were starting to show some improvements defensively. And I think we could see the green shoots of what we're seeing now in terms of just how good this defense has become. But last Christmas, there was no hope, really, of this team achieving much in the playoffs or going on a run. We weren't using the words super and bold together in sentences on streams and articles. And yet here we are it's the 3rd of December for me. It's the 2nd of December for you. I'm in the future. And we are looking at a future which may include a big playoff run. So compared to last Christmas, I think we're in a much better place.
I love it. I think you went for the explanation. I was like all in there. I like that one. I guess for me, similar to Aspen Knight, who is watching, I got to go with your mean one, Mr. Grinch, because it was all the defense. And if anybody's going to take joy away and take a Christmas away, it's going to be the Seahawks defense. It probably would have made more sense if they were wearing their green uniforms. That would have like made my answer so good. But, you know, you had the feel-good story of the Minnesota's own rookie coming out, having a day, you know, gonna have this great game against the Seahawks. And no, they did not let it happen. So I think that was what it would have to be for me. But let's just talk about this defense, because they had 5 takeaways, most in the Seahawks, one in one full game for the Seahawks since 2019. And they have this phrase, living in the death zone. We talked about it earlier this year. It's the moments when the defense needs to dominate, 4th and 1, sudden changes. It's just the mentality that they really want to live in. And so just talking about this living in the death zone, you know, Brian, is this just like a phrase that they say to pump each other up? Or do you feel like this is something that they really recognize in game?
Yeah, I mean, this came up as early as last year. And before I even get into that, I've got to say, you've got me thinking in another direction, AB, when you mentioned the green uniforms. I'm like, oh no, we haven't seen those yet this year. That probably means they're still to come. And I don't know.
They can't use them. They can't use them now.
They can't?
No, I think they've used all their alternative options for this season. So I think that's it.
I hope that's true, because I'm not really. I used to be a big fan of those uniforms. I'm kind of done with those. But to answer your question, we heard the death zone as early as last year, and the story's kind of changed around it. At first, it was like Ernest Jones had kind of started saying it. Then we heard from Mike McDonald, it was actually Adam Dirty who was the first person who said it. And I actually haven't really heard, other than Mike McDonald use it in like some post-game speeches, I haven't heard the players talk about it. I've heard more about the mob ties stuff. I've heard more about DeMarcus Lawrence with a new quote every other day, line up and you'll get up, you know. And I think that's kind of what embodies this defense now. More than, I don't think that there has been any phrase that has stuck. And I'm with you because I know you, this has been kind of a mission for you, AB. You come back to this a few times.
I like it. I'm all about it.
Name this defense. You want to name this defense. And I think it's, I think Mike and I have both been in the category.
I'm just trying to get Mike another book. I'm trying to get him a sequel. Okay. That's like, right. I'm just trying to help my guy out.
That's kind of you. I haven't really felt like they were there yet. I'm feeling like they're pretty damn close to being worthy of being feeded with a name. So I think it's going to have to come organically. I don't think the name has been made yet, but the Death Zone, you know, I don't think that's going to be the one, but it certainly is not a, whenever you're playing the Seahawks, I think any team is pretty concerned about their health. And so that might be in there.
I do want to ask specifically about Ernest Jones because he had a game, 12 tackles, two interceptions. One was a pick six, a second in the league for interceptions right now. And we could break down the X's and O's in the plays that he really did have. But you've seen him now have two really real and raw post-game messages. First was him really having the back of his quarterback, Sam Darnold. And then after Sunday's win, you saw him talk about rededicating his life to Christ, you know, what's bigger than football to him, the love that he has for his teammates. And, you know, Mike, you're around him more than we are and more than most of the listeners. Like, what have you noticed and take from his post-game talk and really how that is affecting the team?
Yeah. Also, for what it's worth, Derek Hall mentioned the Death Zone to me. Post-game. That's where, I don't know if I use it in my story. I think I did. But yeah, it really stuck out. Yeah, I was talking to him about like being backed up, short yardage stuff. And he was like, yeah, man, we call that living in the Death Zone. I was like, oh, that's great. It's good stuff.
You're like, great for my book.
Yeah, I do like Death Zone. Also, I'll just write another book if they win the Super Bowl. There we go. And if the defense doesn't have a name, I have that commemorative edition out by the 4th of July. But going to Ernest. Yeah, I would add a third emotional press conference moment to that would be week one. They lost, but Ernest had a shirt on dedicated to his father who died in July. And Ernest and his dad were really close. He's named after his dad. And he mentioned, I think John Boyle, the team reporter, asked him about it. He was like, man, you're about to make me cry. You know, and then he talked about how much like he's doing it for the guys in the locker room. And he reiterated some of that in the post-game speech that the team put out after the win on Sunday. And I really think that is like Ernest in a nutshell. Even last year, as Brian mentioned, to the Death Zone mention, Ernest was one of the first guys who mentioned last year that they are a championship level defense. They can be the best defense in the league. He did that last year after he had been here for like a month or so. Like Ernest is the soul of the team. I think, you know, he's willing to back up his words with action, whether it's like, you know, talking trash, playing well. You know, we saw him punch a guy in the head in Green Bay because they hit Spoon. And like he really is just about everything. He's very Seahawk-y. Like when I think there's a few guys who are like, okay, if you want to know what the Seahawks are about, watch them. It's like three or four. Ernest is probably the number one. If someone just didn't know the team, like just watch a game, watch 13, listen to them after, and then that's it. You'll get the essence of the Seahawks. I think that's really important too, because when I wrote the book, promise I didn't mean to plug it this much, but when I did, the thing that stuck out was how much those guys were doing it for each other through whatever they were going through, good or bad. And that really powered them through tough times. So, and you could see that in Ernest, you know, whether he came to Sam's defense, you know, verbally or came to Spoon's defense physically, or just is always having his teammates back. That means a lot. And like guys are willing to ride for Ernest and he's willing to, you know, ride right back. And I think that's part of why, that's a huge part of why I'd probably credit it up like half of that, I think, to why the defense is so good.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got, whether you're on a team and it's a teammate or you got a big friend group, that one person you're like, yeah, I need them with me. Like we go into any dangerous situation, like I want that person having my back. And that's definitely Ernest Jones. One of the stories that I loved was just how Sam Darnold said that in team meeting, they put up the birthdays and coach, you know, asked Ernest Jones how old he was. And everybody found out that he was like 26 and they were all like, dude, are you serious? Like really? You're 26 just with his, you know, maturity in the way that he carries himself. But Rob, I'd love to know from you, just this team seems unusually close for how really new of a group it is. How do you see this team just having this relationship with each other?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I often get that reaction as well when people can't believe that I'm not 55 and I'm only 41. No, they are clearly like you've got a few alphas in that locker room. It's pretty obvious, just sort of listening to the way that they speak. I always feel like you need some of those. Obviously, the LOB clearly had them. And now with Ernest Jones and Leonard Williams and DeMarcus Lawrence, Devon Witherspoon, and then offensively, you've got Cooper Kupp. There's sort of players that have been there, have done it, have been around the block, have won Super Bowls in the case of Ernest Jones and Cooper Kupp. And they just seem like the glue that is bringing everything together. And they've set out to sign these players or trade for these players. And as much as it's great to hit on first round draft picks, as they obviously have done with Jackson Smith and Jigba, as great as it is to sort of develop young talent and have that coming through, first and foremost, you've got to find some grizzled veterans who know what to say at the right time, who can lead by example, who are going to set the tone and just be ultimate professionals. And the Seahawks have got that. And that is a big difference. Don't underestimate that at all, because there are a lot of teams out there right now where things are just... Look at the Eagles. They've lost a lot of leadership over the years. The Eagles, like a lot of veteran players. I think that's why Brandon Graham, they probably begged Brandon Graham to come back just to provide that same kind of leadership. And they've lost a lot of it. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, Jalen Carter's no longer the guy who the vets tell to get in line. He's now relying on him and his two sacks. So, you know, I just think that they are so important. And again, hats off to the GM John Schneider and to Mike McDonald and everybody else who's been a part of this for putting this team together. Did a great job.
Yeah, and let's talk about a lot of those other guys, because it's not just Ernest Jones, and I know you probably all have a lot to say about them. So for you, Brian, just when you look at, you know, some of those key plays from Sunday, who are maybe some of the unsung heroes that we weren't talking about or you might not see post-game presser?
Well, honestly, the first one that came to mind is not somebody who necessarily had a great game, but he had a pretty great play. Nick Kalerup, the tight end, blocked his man all the way 5 yards into the end zone as Zach Charbonnet ran in for the only offensive touchdown of the day. I give the crowd a little bit of a shout out as well, as I think they kind of shamed Mike McDonald into going for it on fourth down on that drive. And he had the field goal unit out, called timeout, ended up coming back and going for it. And he kind of admitted that afterwards, that they might have had a little bit of an influence there. And
we can't, Brian, we can't breeze by that. The crowd had an influence on the head coach and he admitted it. Like, I think we have to take a second to be like, okay, 12s, like, let's all get on the same page for what we want during the game.
I love watching Mike Dugar's face as we say that. He just is like, God dang, like that is not how you operate. Where's the principles that are supposed to guide you independent of all the outside
too honest
context?
Mike McDonald is too honest. He's going to tell
But I'm also team never kick as well. So I loved the result.
It is
there.
A conflict. Isn't
they were going to kick like a 37-yard field goal or something, maybe 40 yards. Like, what are you doing? Go for it. You know, anyway, go ahead.
It was a good identity moment. I, you know, as far as unsung heroes, it's a little tough because the offense struggled almost the whole day. I did really like what I saw from both running backs. I think Zach Charbonnet has responded to less playing time really, really well. I think he's played his best football since that's happened. I think Ken Walker has also played some of his best football since that's happened. And all of a sudden, we've got two running backs who are playing pretty darn well. People may not know this, but the Seahawks for the first 9 weeks of the season were like, they ranked in the bottom seven rushing teams in the NFL by almost any metric. They're a top 10 rushing team the last 4 weeks now. And by some metrics, they're a top 5 rushing team over the last 4 weeks. So I think that's going to be a pretty important aspect of this offense that they need to continue to kind of work on, because let's face it, AB, like, you're not going to always be able to do early down play action shot plays to JSN forever and for always. Like, that's just not going to always work. And as you get into these tougher, grittier, grind them out games, the teams that can actually have another style that they can play will have a better chance. And I feel like they hadn't yet proven that they could be a run-oriented team and just kind of turtle shell their way into a victory and trust this defense to do their job. But I mean, if Sam Darnold had taken four sacks against the Rams instead of throwing the four picks, I think the Seahawks are 10-2 right now and in control of the division. So, you know, sometimes being conservative and just taking the sack and running the ball is a formula that can work. So in this week, I think it did.
It's pretty wild just to hear you talk about the change that the Seahawks have had in their run game throughout the season. So Rob, I know we also spent a lot of time last week talking about this run game. What are your thoughts after Sunday?
Well, I got quite upset with the game on Sunday, not because of anything that happened on the field, but because of the broadcast, because I thought it was nonsense, frankly. They didn't seem to understand what the game actually was. And, you know, Joe Davis and Greg Olsen seemed to be watching the game that they wanted to watch instead. And they were going to tell us all bloody hell how much they wanted to watch a different game. And I didn't want to watch a different game. I wanted to watch the one the Seahawks were winning 26-0. So we had the most ludicrous comments, such as Joe Davis saying about the two drives either side of halftime, it's only 6 points from two drives. I was like, I missed something here. Do you get an extra win if you get 30 points against the Vikings? Because it's 16-0, and I'm quite happy with that score, given the Vikings are never going to score a point in this game unless you give them the football. So I was quite happy to sit there. Greg Olsen said at one point, I'm sorry, I'm going off on one again like I did on Sunday.
Keep going. I love this.
Field goals are going to get you beat, is what Greg Olsen said. So I had a look, and I detected that the Super Bowl champions, Philadelphia Eagles, actually kicked three field goals when they beat the Packers in the wild card round. They kicked a further three field goals in the snow against the Rams. And they even kicked four field goals in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. That's 10 field goals in the postseason for Jake Elliott that he made from 11 attempts. So maybe he's not quite right on that one. But the even worse thing about that statement that Greg Olsen made was that later in the game, he said, you have to find multiple avenues to win. So which is it? I often think sometimes, and look, I think there are people out there, and Greg Olsen is one of these people, who they think that every game is the same, that if you basically have a list of 10 rules, if you do every single one of those things, then you will win the game of football. That's not how football works. The Seahawks ran into a buzzsaw the weekend, which was Brian Flores, probably the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, producing a game plan which made life horrendous for Sam Darnold. And in that moment, you have to look at that and say, we can run the ball three times and punt the ball back to the Vikings. Once we have a lead, we are going to win this game. The aim of the game is to win. It is not to win and risk losing by throwing the football. In that, when they were 10-0 up, the best chance of Minnesota scoring a point in that game was having Sam Darnold drop back in the pocket. Don't do it. Like, this is just, this has to be the game. And I'm sorry, I think we've finally lost the plot. And maybe those rules that people like Greg Olsen think you have to tick off all the way. I kind of get the impression that even if you lose the game, as long as you've done all the things that analytically you're supposed to do, you'll get a pat on the back. I'd rather watch the Seahawks win a game of football, personally.
Rob, no worries. There's this guy, Steve Rabel and Dave Wyman, who you can tune into them. It might solve all your issues, and they're going to have a very curated Seahawks perspective for you.
Yeah. Well, I sorry for that rant, but
listen, not everybody gets to hear the stream. So for people who didn't know, now they know.
I didn't know that. And amen, Rob. I 100% agree with you. I got into that argument with some of my co-hosts and some of my friends. They were like, get this game over with. This is awful. And I'm like, I feel like the Seahawks did exactly what they needed to do to win that game. And guess what? If the Rams could have done the exact same thing and come out of Carolina with the win in bad weather, I think all their fans would have been a lot happier than what they ended up dealing with three turnovers that end up losing that game that could end up losing them the Super Bowl. Like, it could lose them the number one seed. It could lose them the division. So, like, how many times have we seen the Seahawks absolutely blow a game against a crap quarterback when they have an open opportunity to make hay in the playoffs? happens all the time. And so I'm right there with you. Amen.
Mike, do you listen to the broadcast ever?
Not in full. I listen to, so my routine typically is I'm obviously at every game. And then before Chris and I do our post game show, either in my Uber or just maybe when I get home, I'll just watch the condensed version, which is like 37 minutes or so, give or take. But it's just, there's no commentary in between. It's just each play. And they show like flags and stuff too. So I'll hear some comments, but never really in full. I don't think any, my hot take maybe of for football, maybe I don't think any broadcast team is worth me doing that. So no. But yeah, I can see how you get, it sounds like what Greg was doing was, he was like, what a lot of Seahawks fans I think do when they watch Seahawks games, to be honest, just maybe in a different form, is watch it with an eye towards what's predictive and what's not. Like, I remember thinking that, against, like, whenever Sam has turnovers, like, we turn it over against a better team, we'll lose in the first round. I had some homies text me during the game when Mike didn't call timeout at the end of the first half, which he should have done. They were like, man, if he has this type of game management, we're going to lose a playoff game. You know, it was like a thinking in the future type of thing, which I don't think is, again, I don't think that's exclusive to any outside viewer. I think fans, whether consciously or subconsciously, do that too. Like, oh, if we don't do this better, a better team will beat us later, you know? And I think that's true in a lot of cases too.
I do want to ask you, Mike, about what you wrote today, just about Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy maybe being the NFL's best defensive tackle duo, and spending some time on that. Just obviously fans, you know, even if they watch the broadcast or they're at Lumen Field, they might see those guys get to the quarterback, but how are they really impacting this defense in more ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think Leo just, we saw this in practice too. It feels like he just chooses, like, all right, I'm about to just beat the guard on this snap. No matter what the play is, it's me versus the guard. He has no shot. And when you can do that on every down, it really, it just pops on tape more so than I think it does in real time. You know, one of the examples I used was like, and I just tweeted all three of these plays as well, is on the, after Chenna got a sack, they got called back because Job was holding. The next three plays are basically Leo. Like, he beats the guard, tackles Aaron Jones 1 yard, pressures Brosmer, he checks it down for 6 yards. Then on third and three, he just beats the guard and sacks Brosmer. Like, it was just the Leo show, you know, and he does something like that almost every week. You know, he can do it on all three downs. I think that's the difference between Leo and some other defensive players, not just defensive tackles, to be honest, is that, like, on first down, he can make something shake. Second down, he can make something shake. Third down, you make something shake. And then Byron is not to the same extent, but it is very similar in that, like, if you don't put two guys on him, you're kind of screwed. You know, coming out of going into week 13, the Seahawks on third and fourth and one, when teams ran it, they were the best team in the league by most metrics, success rate, EPA, stuff. I don't know about yards per carry. That doesn't matter as much on when there's only 1 yard to go. They were just the best team, right? So I was like, okay, how are the Vikings going to handle that? What they do on their one and only fourth and one, they not only did they throw it, they bootlegged it away from Leo and Murph. Now, that went terribly wrong. They should not do that again. But the process, I could see why Kevin O'Connell was like, you know what we're not about to do right now? Even with a rookie quarterback making his first start on the road, we are not about to run it at 91 and 99. Now, I can't guarantee that's what Kevin O'Connell was thinking, but I would roll the dice and bet on that because the tape doesn't lie. You just can't run on Murph, can't run on Leo. DeMarcus Lawrence fits in that as well. But, yeah, and then on top of all that, all the run stuff, the lead in all defensive tackles and sacks at a position that doesn't get sacks. They both have seven, which is that's just crazy, particularly for Murph, who gets double teamed a lot. Like, what we're watching, I think, is really special. Something that, like, even the LOB didn't have at that spot. It's just really, really crazy to think. And the whole spine of the defense is actually really good. We can maybe talk about that later. But those two, it's hard to find a better pairing of interior defensive linemen playing at as high as level as 91 and 99 right now.
And Mike McDonald really singing Leonard Williams praises, saying, like, turn on the tape, find me a guy that is playing better than him. But a name that hasn't been mentioned yet is a guy that I would want to ask you about, Brian. Someone said number 42 is everywhere. Didn't even know his name. Can you talk about just Drake Thomas and how cool of a season this has been for him?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's just a little missile. He just flashes every single game. And You know, I you can go into the numbers, which I always end up going to, because it just contextualizes how good a player or bad a player is playing. And I mean, for Drake Thomas to have 10 tackles for loss at this point in the season, has 3.5 sacks, got another half sack in this game, has a bunch of passes defensed. I want that in my inside linebacker. And I've had this debate with some folks that are like, hey, Jordan Brooks is a very good player. And now he's also making some big impact, flashy plays. But his time in Seattle, that guy made a lot of good quality plays. He did not make a lot of impact plays. There was not a lot of tackles for loss. There were not a lot of sacks. There were not a lot of game-changing plays. There's one game I can remember against Arizona in his final year where he was all over the place. And I'm like, this is the Jordan Brooks I'm looking for. And there are people that worship at the altar of Jordan Brooks because he played 100% of the snaps really well, or maybe like 95, even if he didn't have those flash plays. And I'm of the belief that impact plays are what end up changing the outcome of a football game. A tackle for loss that sets a team back behind the sticks, a sack, a turnover, a knockdown pass. Those are the differences usually between, you know, a win and a loss. And so to have a guy who's an undrafted free agent, who you claimed off the Raiders, who sat on the bench for your practice squad, to come in here at like 5'10 and whatever he weighs, most of his weight is in his thighs, man. The guy's got like massive Quadzilla thighs, and he's just a piss missile. I mean, every single time I walk into the locker room, that guy has got his head in his tablet looking at film. And every single week I watch that guy translating what he saw in film to absolutely eviscerating some blocking scheme by anticipating what's coming, shooting his shot, and making a big play. And forget whether they're like, I mean, I went all on about winning and losing and all that stuff. That's just fun to watch, man. Like, we have not had a lot of linebackers in at least the last 10 years that have been able to make those kinds of plays. And it's nice to see Drake becoming one of those players, knowing that Tyrese Knight's not that far behind and he's on the, you know, he's available. Patrick O'Connell, when he was in there, he also made some pretty big plays. So that linebacker room, I think that Mike Dugar and I kind of railed on for their offseason, has kind of actually become a strength of the team, which is wild.
That's pretty cool. I love the visual too, just of you seeing him in the locker room, like head in the tablet. I think that's so cool because not everybody gets to be at the VMAC, you know, and see those things happen. So love when you guys get to share those. But I love this comment, TFL Thomas. He is leading the team in TFLs right now. Maybe that could be his new name. But Rob, do you have any thoughts on just what you've seen from Drake Thomas this year?
Well, the thought, it is very difficult to scout linebackers. Linebackers and safety are they're probably the hardest positions to look at in college football and identify the obvious talents. There was a guy called Jared Davis who was at Florida, former first round pick. I think he was taken by Detroit, I want to say. And everything about watching him play, you just thought, I'm watching like an unbelievable future 15-year starter. And he came into the league and didn't really do anything, has bounced around a little bit and has not amounted to much. Devin White's another example of that, you know, from LSU. He's taken very early by Tampa Bay and has not amounted to much. It's very difficult to find the players that are going to work out. And nothing about Drake Thomas physically, just to look at him, would you think, well, this guy is going to have a major impact in the NFL. And then, like Brian has said, when you watch the game, he's just shot out of a cannon. Like, he comes flying downfield, levels somebody. He's all over the field. That's exactly what you need at the position. Like, there's such a lack of aggression at linebacker in college football these days, I have to say. Like, so many passive linebackers playing, like, even in the SEC and the Big Ten. And you see this guy just flying around like it's the last game of his life. And it's great to watch. And he's making a role for himself where you think this guy deserves to be a long-term fixture on this defense. So long may it continue.
It's pretty awesome the amount of times I feel like even on this show, we've talked about this guy could have a real future with this. Like, it's a lot of guys who have stepped up. And there is one more defensive guy I want to talk about. But first, if you didn't hear our discussion earlier about the Christmas songs and Christmas music and holiday decorations, all the things, here's a comment from Matt just about National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Listen back if you haven't heard yet what we were discussing earlier. But one more guy that always, you know, gives me a good laugh just because of his own sense of humor. I was excited to see him get that interception almost until it wasn't. Reek Wollin, he was tweeting after the game. I thought I was running back one for a second. He really did go into Madden mode and, you know, Brian, you know, protect the football a little better. That could have been a big time takeaway for the Seahawks.
You know, I know Mike McDonald was not happy about it. I get it. He can't be happy about it. I loved that play. And people can, like, they can kind of crap on Tariq if they want. But that guy, I think, has been playing some of the best football on that defense. And a lot of people don't recognize it because when he's playing really well, most of the time, the ball's not coming toward him. And he finally got his chance. Broke on the ball perfectly, and we got to see Reek Wollin pretty much open up the throttle almost all the way, and that guy was moving on the field. And that was the second time in this game. I don't know if everyone else saw, he caught up to Ernest Jones on the interception return. Like, Ernest Jones was like, oh crap, someone's catching me, and then he realized it was his teammate Reek Wollin. And you know, that guy is just such a special athlete, and seeing amazing athletes do amazing athletic things is part of why I love watching sports. And so I loved everything about it. I love that he was like, you could see it from the moment he made that play, AB. He's like, I'm taking this to the house no matter what.
East to West. I mean, he did a full. Yeah. I was like, I don't think the camera was ready for that one.
No, I don't think anybody was. But you know what? Credit to, was it Jalen Reagor that made the tackle? I can't remember, but like, or Naylor, one of those guys. It was a great tackle. It just got stuck, fumbled the ball. It's a shame. But you know what? Hopefully that's a sign of things to come. I mean, if you can get Tariq Woolen increasing his confidence on making plays on the ball going into this stretch, that could be the difference between good and great. So I loved it. I know some people not as much.
Yeah, Mike, I'm curious on your thoughts on this in Reek's play, but even more specifically, like, we're seeing the Seahawks defense now get takeaways pretty consistently, and it seems like they are expecting them as well. Is this a scenario where you see the Seahawks maybe having their defenders practice some ball security now in practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been doing that the whole year, but the DBs particularly should have been doing that all year for two reasons. One, Darion Kendrick just kept dropping picks earlier in the year. And I remember Kobe did the same thing Reek did in week four. He fumbled, I think, on the first drive of the Thursday night game against Arizona after a pick, give the ball right back to the Cardinals. But speaking of, like, I think just turnovers or just any negative plays in general, I'm back to Drake Thomas a little bit. I think that Drake's play is like embodies Mike's philosophy. Like, Mike is really big on, all right, how can I create a negative outcome for the offense on this play? And that's not everybody's cup of tea as a defense. You know, Brian Flores clearly believes that. And some more just like, all right, if they just don't get explosives, they can't score, so they can't win, which is fine too. You know, Vic Fangio was kind of that way for a little bit, and that got Brandon Staley the Chargers job, basically thinking like that. So both methods can work, but Mike's really stands out because of what you see in guys like Drake, because you can just weaponize dudes if you're confident. Like, to Brian's point about winning and losing, you know, Drake's TFL he had was a loss of four. It was after a big play by the offense, right? That's not a coincidence that Mike McDonald called a run blitz. I think Eamon Worre gave up a seam ball. And so the very next play, Mike was like, you know what? All right, let's get it back. Boom, I'm blitzing Drake. And then Drake, I was talking to Drake about that play after, and he was just like, yeah, Mike sent me. I'm reading the running back, reading the path of the ball. Boom, I just shoot it and go. But Mike puts him in position, and a lot of guys, to be able to do that because it's his mentality. Like, how can I increase some negative outcomes? It's really cool. Thought process, I think, because there's, again, that's not a common school of thought. And when you have that and you know how to weaponize each guy, you can like, you get what we're seeing here. You know, you get good short yardage defense, which usually requires being aggressive. You get a lot of turnovers, which requires being aggressive, and it just unlocks guys' ability. I think one thing, and I've heard coaches and executives mention what Rob just mentioned about scouting safeties and linebackers, is because some of these guys also are just bad going backwards. Like, legitimately, it's just hard to just turn and run or backpedal at these weights that these guys are, and then like follow the ball and everything. You know what a lot of guys can do?
Have you ever run full speed, backpedal full speed?
Well, yeah, I do. Yeah, I play flag every week.
Recently. Oh, how was your Turkey Bowl? We didn't even ask you about it, Mike.
We won. We beat the team that wins every year.
That was the goal.
Yeah. I got my trophy's upstairs. I got to get my trophy for it. Remind me to bring my trophy next show. But you know what a lot of good guys are good at in college and the pros is coming forward. And Mike's finding a good way to maximize that. You know, it really, like, Jamal Adams was that way. Axman to go backwards, not so good. Axman to come forward, he was an all pro. So, like, Drake's like that. Patrick O'Connell's like that. Tyrese Knight is like that. Spoon is like that. Even Warriors like that. Like, you just see, like, all these guys fit. Kobe, Ty as well. So, I think Drake is one of many guys, like, benefiting from Mike McDonald's genius. And just real quick on Reek. It's funny, also, Mike McDonald mentioned that he screwed that play up. I think they're in like cover three or something against like all verticals too. So like Reek's in a bad spot. He's got a vertical route behind him and one in front of him. He's got to split the two and be able to jump the one in front of him. And if the ball goes over his head, backpedal like a catcher or like a center fielder to the other one, which I can see why Mike McDonald's like, yeah, I screwed that up. So shout out to Reek for not only getting his first pick, but also covering his coach's ass. You know, as much as like Reek does catch a lot of flag, like he saved his coach right there. Now he then fumbled it, but. That stood out to me as well when Mike admitted that. And you could see it on film, too, later. Like, oh, I see why he didn't like that call. That probably could have been a touchdown if Reek's not, like, excellent at playing the ball when he wants to be. So, yeah, I mean, that whole defense on Sunday was, like, that was elite stuff. I know this Brosmer kid's not very good, but what they were doing to him outside of the pick six was just him being a bonehead. Was just, like, play after play, just elite stuff.
Hey, don't you guys kind of get the feeling? Sorry, AB. Don't you guys kind of get the feeling that this defense is picking up steam? Like it's getting better and better. I mean, AB, have you noticed that it feels like it's harder and harder to find success against the Seahawks defense?
They feel like suffocating, Brian, and I think it's suffocating, but also it gives a little bit of what you saw the Vikings in a different way due to Sam Darnold in the beginning of the game. You're like, whoa, like what is going on?
Yeah, very, very well said, and yeah, I just think it's an important one to watch because it's the best part of the team to begin with, and if they're getting better and they're getting healthier, watch out.
I love it. Well, Mike, I did ask you about the full speed running backward because in college I had a friend. We were at like 5 a.m. footwork for my lacrosse team, and she's backpedaling full speed, and the ground is like nearly frozen because it's so cold outside, and it goes full speed backwards, face plants, and it is engraved into my mind. So I myself have a secondhand fear of full speed backpedaling. So I have not done it in.
Oh yeah, I'm a DB.
You're yeah, a DB.
DB at heart. I was playing corner yesterday on Thursday. Yeah, I dropped a pick six, unfortunately. But
all right. Well, yeah. It's cool, Reek. We're not coming at you. It's all good, but I do want to make sure we have time to talk about this offense because there is a lot there, right? And let's just start with this offensive line because, like I just mentioned, something that really jumped out, I think, to anyone who is watching this game was how aggressive Minnesota was. Sam Darnold was sacked 4 times in just the first half. So, Rob, for you, just what about this Vikings defense made it so hard for the Seahawks to protect Sam Darnold?
No, they were very aggressive. I think they're the most aggressive defense in the league. I think the Falcons are up there, you know, as well next week. So we'll see if they go with a similar game plan. But I think for me, when I was watching that game, I'm just going to give all the credit to Brian Flores. Personally, we've not seen that happen this season. You know, when the Seahawks have had bad moments in offense, it's not looked quite like that. I think you just have to take your hat off to Flores and the Vikings. And you're not going to play them again this year. And you're not going to play Nick Bosa when you play the Niners. The Colts, the Panthers, even the Rams to an extent with the way that they're playing defensively at the moment are not going to bring that kind of a challenge down the line. So I have to say, I wasn't really that worried about it. I liked the fact that they ran the ball a bit better in this game. And I would have liked to maybe have seen them have some solutions to the questions in the first half a little sooner. But I personally had absolutely no issue whatsoever with them not using the timeout before halftime, because all I was doing sat there watching that was thinking, get into the locker room and get your heads together and work out a game plan for dealing with this aggressive defense. And I don't need to see any more. I don't think we've got 10 on the board. They got another field goal, fine. I didn't need to see anything. Max Brosma and the Vikings were not going to score any points. Get into the locker room and work out a plan. The plan was not exactly, they're not going to give the Seahawks any awards for the game plan that they came up for the second half, which was essentially just to get the ball out quicker and get it out wide and sort of those extended handoffs they had. But they moved the ball enough to get the job done. So I'm not going to worry too much about some of the stuff. I know everyone's having a almighty panic about Anthony Bradford this week, and Sam Darnold was compared to Jameis Winston by Danny Kelly today. I'm not going to dabble in any of that.
I do want to ask you, Brian, about this future plan for the O-line, because like Rob just alluded to, it's definitely been a topic of discussion around the Seahawks right now. What do you take from, what this O-line could look like when maybe Jalen Sundell does return?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say, I don't think Sam Darnold compares to Jameis Winston, at least as a receiver.
Or as a singer?
No. There's a lot of ways I'm glad he does not compare to Jameis Winston. But as far as the offensive line, look, I think just about everybody has written off Anthony Bradford, and I think that's fine. People can have whatever opinion they want. This guy beat out all the competition over and over and over again, and he was not the guy that was expected to be the starter coming into the season. So if you don't think the coaching staff, based on what we've seen from Kobe Bryant, Drake Thomas, Josh Jobe, like on down the line, if you don't think they're looking for opportunities for guys that have proven themselves in practice to supplant other players, even good players, you're crazy. Like, you're not paying attention. So if you don't think the coaching staff has noticed that Anthony Bradford is maybe the weaker link on that offensive line, I think that's also not real. But what I do believe is that Olu Oluwatimi has come in and played credible center. Like, not incredible, but credible center. And the run game has actually improved while he's been in there. That might be a coincidence, might not. And I think there will be a question for the coaching staff. Mike McDonald has said it openly that, well, Jalen Sundell, before this injury, he was the backup guard. If there was an injury at guard, he was going to slide out and Olu was going to play center. That's known. So now I think they will consider that when Jalen Sundell comes back. But here's the thing to everyone might be like, oh, great. Finally, it's late in the year. This is your last game against a losing team. And so you're talking about taking an offensive line that has performed better than any Seahawks offensive line in the last 10 years. And you're going to start messing with who plays what position when you go into the toughest stretch of the season. I think that's, like, they better be sure, because I have a feeling Jalen Sundell or Christian Haynes would not necessarily be better. They would just have different problems. Maybe that would end up being better overall, but I don't think they've got, Steve Hutchinson sitting on the bench ready to come in and be a Pro Bowl right guard. So we'll see. I think it's all possible, but I have some questions about whether it's going to work.
Yeah, Mike, I do want to make sure we get to some Seahawks key injury updates, but what are your thoughts on just the future of this O-line?
I do think they could have just some issues in general with teams copying a little bit of the philosophy that the Vikings use. I might write about that this week, too. No one's going to copy the Vikings. You can't really do that. It takes longer than a couple days of practice to become Brian Flores. But the making Sam have to think a little bit, taking away JSN, which they did a really, really great job of, I thought that stuff can be repeatable. And it only works, though, if Sam doesn't have time to get to the other guys. And you look at some of the protection breakdowns. It wasn't even a lot of just like Anthony Bradford getting beat. Like, Abe got beat, Charles got beat, Nick Callerup just blew a block. So they had a bunch of problems in the protection. You know, who's that got beat by Van Ginkle? I think Barner in the red zone. I think those are the four sacks. So, and they just had a blown protection on a second, third down as well. So I am a little worried about that, no matter who plays, because that's just like communication stuff. Like, for instance, the strip sack, that could have been anybody. If you don't block who you're supposed to, you know, Sam could fumble the ball. So I think the O-line is like really good. Like, just from a pure talent standpoint, they block really well. They're blocking better currently in the run game in particular. So like, talent wise, it's really just like communication. Make sure everybody's on the same page. You can shake up the line and do that. I don't really think it matters much. Just in general, it's just giving Sam time and not getting confused, because that really seems like when they get in trouble, you know, it's like, think of all the time Sam has had to make an off script play because someone got right in his face. He's made some good decisions doing that. The Steelers play to AJ comes to mind. He had one against the Saints as well to Jackson early. But it's one of the, now I'm sounding like Greg Olson. It is one of those things that you do play some better teams. And that,
careful,
and that
Rob's gonna come at you through the screen.
That'll hurt you, because there's something to that. I think so. I don't think replace Anthony Bradford, if they do that, which I think they will make the big difference. If just in general they're not on the same page with the protection stuff, and B, they don't do a better job of making someone other than JSN or getting explosive plays from someone other than Jax. And I think that was, they did enough to win the game. That's true. That's great. That's what they're supposed to do. But that, you need other explosives from somebody else. You just need to, because I think other teams are going to be like, all right, we're about to triple team 11. Now what? And if they don't have a good now what, you know, that could be a problem.
So we're just saying, somebody get it done. Somebody protect our quarterback. We don't really care who it is, but we do care about if we'll be back in Julian Love and the game coming up on Sunday, the Falcons. So we're going to get to that right after we tell you about our sponsor for this season. So check out this quick video.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us. So start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Oh, there we go. We are so excited to have Sleeper with us this season. So check it out, because it's great to keep up with what's going on. News alerts, live scores, stats, win real money, and even real-time chats with others. Make sure you check out the number one sports app today and try it out for yourself. Use promo code HMA and you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms for use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. So check out the Sleeper app today. If you're spending all the time watching all these sports, you know, you might as well do it, right? Oh, that's not what we want.
I like it.
We're getting back to it.
We're getting closer.
This is why, you know what, guys, we might just be on Sleeper the rest of today. But I do want it, while I'm figuring this out, I do want to ask you, Rob, just about a key injury update that we might have with the Seahawks with Julian Love. Like, what changes? We're talking about how awesome this defense is, but like, what changes if we do see Julian Love out there?
Well, you get one of your best players back for a start, and he is he's an unbelievable player. And it was interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody this today, and they were, the Giants GM has been talking about the sort of the leadership void that has been on that roster in recent years, and he highlighted the loss of Leonard Williams and Julian Love as sort of a main inspiration for that. And they're here in Seattle. So you get another one of those players that we've been talking about who are going to just lead by example, ultimately professional on the field and off, and a hell of a player. And if they've just bought themselves a little bit more time, you know, to get him absolutely 100% healthy or close to, I mean, no player's ever 100%, but if, as close as he can be, then great. Because getting him back at this stage of the season, if having watched the defense play the way it did last Sunday, to think that you could then get Julian Love and Jaron Reed back into the mix,
that's a nasty thought for a lot of those teams that are coming down the schedule for Seattle.
It is pretty wild, and it is funny to me too. Sleeper app, you're going to get a lot more advertising time on this show tonight, so use it up. I hope our views skyrocket tonight. But Brian, I'd love to know from you, like, in your, for your perspective, what does really change if Julian Love, if we see him, and do you think that we'll see him?
You know, it's really hard to say. The Seahawks did make a move where they let someone go off of their 53-man roster today, which opened up a spot. So somebody is probably coming off of IR at some point. So, you know, they waived Myles Gaskin, the running back, off the 53. They've got three other guys, Eric Saubert, Jaron Reed, and Derek Young, who are eligible to come off this week. They would need three more roster spots. Honestly, as much as there's going to be impact on the field, Ty Okada's played pretty darn well. I think you're going to notice Julian Love, because Julian Love has been one of the best players on that defense when he's out there. But I think you're also going to notice the Seahawks are going to all of a sudden have some hard decisions to make on who they move off of 53-man roster. And as they saw with Jarek Reed, teams now are like, oh, the Seahawks are really good. That's a good roster. We want to steal people from that roster. So like Darian Kendrick, like Jarek Reed, you might be saying goodbye to some pretty decent players. And that's something to watch, because it also thins out your roster if there's another injury and then you can't bring that guy back. That's what happened when Ty Okada almost, you know, wasn't able to play and they brought Quandre Diggs in because they lost Jarek Reed. So that's kind of the lesser, you know, probably talked about or focused on part of this. But the Seahawks have, I think, had five straight weeks of putting somebody on the IR. I think they're going to break that streak this week, but now you're going to have probably a number of straight weeks of people coming off the IR, and they're going to have to figure out what to do with hopefully that good news.
I mean, I hope so, man. We've been talking about the strength of this defense, right? But also Falcons, you know, they might be 4-8, but they also have a strong defense. And also Bijan Robinson, almost 200 yards from scrimmage. He has almost 1,000 yards already this season. So just Mike, when you look at matchup against the Falcons and how the Seahawks really have to stop him, what sticks out to you?
Yeah, I mean, they shut him down in the second half of last year's game in a way that I do find pretty repeatable. You know, it's just like get upfield, come downhill, come forward. Like I was talking about earlier, linemen are also much better at that. That was like a lot of people were mad at like Clint Hurt for and Ken Norton for dropping linemen and stuff. So I actually think this should be a blowout. I think they should shut down Bijan. I'm trying to pronounce his name like how he says he wants it now. I've been saying it wrong for a little bit now. But, I mean, yeah, this is on paper. It's like impenetrable force, immovable object type thing where Bijan and Tyler Allgeier have gone over 100 yards together rushing like eight times, I think eight of their 12 games, whereas the Seahawks have only allowed running backs to rush for a combined 100 yards three times. And in those three games, it's been 101 yards, 102, and 103. Just barely cracking it. And in the Commanders game when they did it, I think like 50 of those yards came in the fourth quarter when they pulled the starters. So this is a stingy defense, one that has not allowed a 100-yard rusher at all this year. So, I mean, you want to talk about uphill climb. The Seahawks are tough. It really makes the whole defense come together. You can't run on them. You can't throw to them. And if you do, you can't throw to your receivers. Receivers also have the lowest number of receptions, I think, or yards, or both, against the Seahawks. Now, the trade-off is they're giving up, like, the third most and, like, fourth most, I think, like, running back and tight end receptions. But, I mean, the lesser of two evils, right? Like, what's the average receiver catch goes for, like, I don't know, 15 yards or something like that. Tight ends and running backs tend to be in single digits. So it's really a lesser of two evils things there. So, yeah, I think Kirk's in trouble, Kirk Cousins. Bijan's in trouble. Tyler Allgeier's in trouble. Like, this is whether they got Julian Love, Jaron Reed, whoever back. This defense is humming right now, and you know that they're gonna be hungry. Also, like a personal note for a lot of these guys, yeah, a lot of these guys were from the South, so when they do play teams like Atlanta, their families show up in abundance. Last year, there was like no joke, like 100 people in the family section when we left. I had to get through it to go to the post game. I was like, where are all these people coming from? Spoon had like 20 people there. Anyway, so like I'm bringing that up to say you're gonna be a lot of people who are like, man, my grandma here today, I ain't giving up a stuff no lie, like there's people's high school coaches come out, like a lot of people. So I'm really confident they're going to shut down pretty much everything the Falcons are good at, which is not much, and win this pretty comfortably.
Hey, your grandma's there. You are showing out, all right? That is what you are doing. Also, something to note, Drake London is considered day-to-day. He's missed the past two games, but you know that if he can, he's going to want to be out there for this game against the Seahawks. But before we wrap up, just what's going on your channel, Rob? Anything we should stay up with?
Well, I have a piece up complaining about Greg Olsen for Monday.
We all heard it. So everybody else.
Yeah. I'm gonna read it. I'm gonna go read it right soon.
I actually stayed up till about 2:30 in the morning after the game to write that piece. So do check it out. And there's also an article that I wrote yesterday about the draft being awful and how that is going to impact the offseason for not just the Seahawks, but for a lot of teams. But I'm developing some thoughts. I was going to wait to the offseason to say this, but I've just decided to write about it now, that I think it's going to shift the Seahawks into a different mindset this offseason, because this is without a shadow of a doubt the worst draft that I have ever written about and studied and done all that stuff. And I started the blog in 2008. So it is going to be... it's going to be a tough one to cover when the season's finished.
Shoot. Well, I hope none of those guys in this draft class are watching Seahawks Collective tonight. Brian, what do you have coming up this week?
I just published my Tale of the Tape previewing the game with the Falcons. We got Mark Raimondi from ESPN covers the Falcons on with me tomorrow morning for First Look. And we got Real Hawk Talk tomorrow night with Nathan Ernst and Dana O'Gorman. So all that good stuff coming up, and I personally am going to try to find Rob's Instagram so I can see pictures of this cruise. That's like,
come on, that will Rob. Be up for me. Rob, we need you going down the slide. Come on.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'll be on that slide. Don't worry about that. Yeah.
The pasty white Brit. I want all the pictures I can get.
Sun deck. Hit the sun deck. All right, Mike. What do you have coming up?
Our latest Seahawks Man to Man pod, our newest Seahawks Man to Man pod will drop in the morning. We had to preview the game. Tori McElhaney, she covers the Falcons for the Falcons. Actually, used to be my colleague at The Athletic, so shout out to her. That'll drop in the morning. And also, Chris and I do our one big thing after we watch the film. That'll all drop in the same episode Wednesday morning. And also, shout out to everyone who wants a book, who's ordered a book already. We've shipped about, I think, like 30 or 40 out in the last week or so, signed copies. If you want one, DM me. All my DMs are open on every platform. I will make sure you get a signed copy shipped to you or your loved one for the holidays.
Come on. I like it. But stay up with all these guys have. That is it for the Seahawks Collective. We are in December football. It's already here. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Brian, Mike, Rob, AB, thanks for tuning in. Have a great night.